This is Line Break, where we deconstruct poetry written by young writers and discuss the inspiration and intention behind the poems. Take a pause and enjoy the line breaks. Here's episode 3.
Hi, I am here with Lady Midnight. She's going to be reading her poem Lost and Found. Go ahead.
Lost and Found. And the candle flame falls, but we still try to dream on a cloud, dipped in memories, immersed in the bittersweet feel of a grudge against the universe, a hatred for the wretched and indolent sky thief, for just as we begin to love something, it is lost in the great realms of the majestic night sky. Only in photos of the quaking earth can we finally find a reason to live, and in the stars we see the constellation of the lost and loved for. Underneath that blanket of light, their veins run thick with your tears, while you x-ray every part of their soul to hold in your hands until the love of the world zips up your bleeding heart and his candle burns in our eyes forever.
Wow, that's so amazing. What was your overall inspiration for this? And first, you should say that this is an Abacadarian poem.
Oh, yeah.
That each line starts with a letter of the alphabet. So the first line starts with A, the second line starts with B, and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So, what was your inspiration for this?
Well, it's kind of sad, but I had a teacher who used to teach me but didn't teach me anymore, who passed away, and I was feeling kind of sad about it since I liked him a lot. And so I was wanted to write something about it, but I was having a struggle with it. So I decided to do the poem name that you said that I can never pronounce. And yeah, that was my overall inspiration for it. I wanted to write something because since he was a poet too, and so I thought it was a good way to kind of honor his memory.
That's really cool. What was your inspiration for the title Lost and Found, and how does that tie into the rest of the poem?
Okay, so often I'll have like a list of cool titles I'll want to use, and so sometimes I'll go and pick something that I just think is really cool. And I think the way it ties into the poem is kind of like it's like something's lost, but then also you kind of find it.
Yeah, that's awesome. So since this poem feels kind of like personal to you, do you feel like there are certain poems that you write that feel like they're more yours than other poems?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Sometimes I'll write things about just, you know, life as usual, or something like a good image or something that comes up to me. But I think for this one and other poems that I've written, if something happens to me, I want to write about it. Or if I see something sweet or something strange, then, or just something that seems really cool to write a poem about, I want to write about it.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. This was one of those times.
Do you use poetry a lot as a way to get through difficult times?
I would say yes and no. Sometimes I'll just cry and be really sad, but I think a lot of times, even if it's like just a crap poem, it's good to write something and just have something down, even if I don't put it on a Young Writers Project, or even if it's not a poem, even if I just want to write something. And sometimes I'll write letters to people if I'm feeling sad about something, not necessarily send them, but just write them.
Yeah, I think that's really great, because poetry, like one of the many gifts of poetry is that you can use it to get through times when you feel sad or angry, or like the world is just so unfair. Like, it's a way to get through that.
Young Writers Project, I love that about Young Writers Project too, is I like a month ago, I was coming back from Florida and I was feeling like super upset since I got home and it was cold and I did not like it at all. And as we were in the airport shuttle, I logged into Young Writers Project and I look at the tiny writes. And someone had put some random crazy thought, and it just made me smile, and my day got better. So it's one of the things I love about it.
Yeah. How has YWP helped you, like, and influenced your writing?
Well, this is my, like, this is my classic story. But I never really wrote poetry before the Young Writers Project. And I had like, a poetry thing in 7th grade in English, and I detested it. And it was awful, and I didn't like it at all. But then sometime I found Young Writers Project, and it just seemed like it was I love to write, obviously, but it just seemed like a really good place to kind of put stuff out. And looking back at my earlier poems, I can see that people commenting or people liking or people saying, hey, here's what you can do better, has really helped to make my writing better as a writing poet person.
Yeah, I agree for sure. I was around like 7th or 8th grade when I started getting into poetry too. Before, I had always been writing when I was younger because I didn't really do school for like a lot of my younger childhood. So I was just writing stories and I'd write like little sketches for it too. And then I got to like middle school and I started writing poetry. But at that point, I thought that everything had to rhyme and it had to like be this way and it had to be about this and stuff. But then in 8th grade, I took a high school poetry class, which is kind of like weird flux, but okay. But anyway, yeah, that really got me into poetry even more because then I had workshops and I joined YWP around that time. And yeah, that got me interested in poetry a lot more and it expanded my, like what I would write about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the, I think the first thing I put on YWP ever, I'm not really proud of it, but it's a like a long rhyming poem about Marie Antoinette's life.
Oh, really?
That I wrote for French class, and my friend and I read it in front of the entire class, which is not a highlight of 7th grade. Actually, maybe it was 8th grade, I don't even remember, it was one of those years, but it was not a highlight. But it's funny, and it rhymes, and from then on, I've had my periods of, like, rhyming poems, and then there was like, a month of dark, sad poems that didn't rhyme, so.
Yeah, I don't really know what phase I'm in. I think that I'm sort of writing a lot of poems in, like, lowercase. Like, everything is lowercase right now. I'm not sure why, it's just kind of speaking to me.
Yeah, I've been working, I'm part of the playwriting workshop right now, so I've been working more on that and haven't been publishing a lot of poems, but sure, once that over, I'll start getting back to the old poetry grind.
How is poetry different than playwriting for you? Because I wrote a play recently for school, and I was like, oh, I don't know if this really works. Because
it doesn't really sound like something. Okay, I love writing the plays here so much. It's such a highlight of my year. Last year, I wrote a play that was really fun about God and his second daughter got presented, and it was super fun. This year I'm writing a play about a newscasting thing, and I love writing comedy. I live with two brothers, and there's always jokes and insults and sarcasm. And it's really different because when you're writing a play, you don't have to describe what's going on. You're just writing dialogue for people. And the job of like the, oh my God, what are they called? Like the little, what are they called? Stage directions. you sort of say like so-and-so moves over here or so-and-so works out or whatever, but you're really just writing dialogue and it's up to the actors to figure out what you mean by it. And also a challenge of that is you're writing the dialogue and you have to have that kind of the beginning and then the introduction, then like the climax and then the conclusion with just dialogue. Well, with poetry, you can describe what's going on, and it doesn't always have to make total sense. Like, you can just drop a random line or a cool metaphor in there, and it can be abstract. Like, that's poetry! Yeah, exactly. Poetic license! I can say that's poetry. But with playwriting, it's totally different. You have to actually make sense. And it'd be something that someone would actually say in the context of your play.
Yeah, that's the thing for me, is that I was writing, like, a short monologue, and I kept, like, making it really poetic and, like, all these metaphors. But then I stopped and I looked at it. I was like, wait, no one would actually say this.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it has to be something, too, that your character would say. Like, I've been having a bit of a struggle with that this year. Is my main character's kind of shy. Well, she's kind of shy, but she also really wants, her job. And so I've had to be careful of how I write for her versus the other characters. Because there's something she wouldn't say that they would say. So I have to be careful of that.
All right, so back to your poem.
Yeah.
So there's this one part that I really like that is immersed in a bittersweet feel of a grudge against the universe. What was your inspiration for that part?
Oh, gosh. Well, a lot of it was me trying to find words that began with the letter. Yeah. So from what I remember, I found immersed and bittersweet. I've always loved the word bittersweet since it's a bit of an oxymoron. Mm-hmm. In itself, but I've always liked that. And I think of a grudge against the universe is just kind of like the feeling where you're like, why did you do this to me? Like, why does this happen? Like, this really sucks. I didn't do anything to deserve it. And I loved the way that kind of the bittersweetness and that feeling kind of went together. And I liked that a lot.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, like, we can't control what happens with the universe or other people. Those are really the two things that you can't control.
Yeah, like, I could say something to someone and they could get super mad, or they could choose to, like, not have it affect them. And I can't control how they're going to react. I can just control what I say, what I'm going to do, how I'm going to look at things.
Yeah. You can't control when someone is born or when someone dies or when it starts to rain.
Yeah, exactly.
We can write about it, and that's the cool part. Exactly. When you write a poem about something that you don't really, like, talk about or acknowledge, how does that really feel?
Well, I think the thing brings me back to Young Writers Project again, another pitch, but I like how, you know, when I write on here, for the most part, I don't know any of you. I've never met any of you. I have no idea what you look like. Mm-hmm. Or I've met you briefly at some sort of event. Right. And so sharing like a poem that I feel really deeply about,
my dog,
or passionately about, and sharing it with with essentially strangers versus sharing it with my family who wants to ask questions and other annoying things. I think it's a really special kind of way to get your writing out there and get more non-objective feedback and support.
Yeah, I agree. It's definitely very freeing to write about something that you don't really talk about and then not have to tell someone that you don't really want to tell.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And, like, someone who's just going to look at it from a totally different perspective and say, like, from outside of the situation. Mm-hmm. That's what I think really helps, is when you write a poem and it's just kind of a tricky topic and then someone outside of the situation comments on it. I think that helps exactly. a lot.
Yeah, like, Nina Estrella, like, she commented on this, and I was feeling kind of sad about it, and she said something nice, and I was like, oh, thank you, that made my day.
Yeah, I think that's really the power of, like, sharing poetry, or just writing in general, is that the feedback that you get and the support really helps you.
Yeah, because you know that someone out there is kind of watching out for you, and they're thinking about you.
Yeah, that's really great. So let's talk about your ending. Would you mind reading that again? Like the last three lines?
Sure.
Or four lines?
X-ray every part of their soul to hold in your hands until the love of the world zips up your bleeding heart and his candle burns in our eyes forever.
What was your inspiration for that ending, and how did you know how to end it that way?
Well, the ending of
Abacadarian?
Abacadarian, thank you.
Yeah.
It's always a bit hard because you have X, Y, and Z, which are all pretty difficult to think of a word for. So I chose kind of X-ray every part of their soul. So it's kind of like you want to remember someone, and in particular, I want to remember this man, kind of like to remember, because otherwise I'm going to forget what he looks like or forget the things he used to say or whatever. And fast forward to the last line, I always want to tie in to kind of the whole message of the poem with the last line, because otherwise it's just leaving off in the middle, sort of.
Right.
So that's why I kind of brought back the candle reference. And I also think it reminds me of like a candlelight vigil or something, where people like light candles for people who died, which I think it's a really special, nice little touch there.
I think so too, for sure. Just the memory burns in our eyes forever, and we, like, always remember this person, even if they're not physically there.
Totally. That's where I was going.
Do you think that the Abacadarian style in general is limiting, or is it helpful because then you know, like, this is the way it's going to turn out, and I just need to sort of fill in the blanks?
Yeah, I think both, because it kind of depends on what you want to write about, because if you want to write about maybe, like, a happy poem about... like your friend, like, if you want to write about your friend and how much you love your friend, it doesn't, maybe not necessarily the best, like, style to use, but I think if you're more interested in kind of a free verse sort of, maybe not melancholic poem, mm-hmm. that you want, like, I always use it when I'm sad, but I have having trouble starting or figuring out what I want to say. Because it really, having a bit of a structure kind of helps me.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'll write, like, 10 beginnings and then hate all of them and never write the poem.
Yeah, I agree. And the only part about it that's tricky for me is when you get to, like, the Q, X.
Yeah, exactly.
Because there are only so many words that you can use. But what's interesting is, like, seeing that you think it's so, like, structured and limiting, and then two different poems in that style could be completely different.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I wrote another one of these... starts with, I forget what it's called. It starts with an F. Oh, Flooding. I remember. Flooding. And it was Love to Write posted a photo on New Year's Project of like a kind of a scene at Lake Champlain with water everywhere, and it was flooded. And or maybe it was called Flooded. I don't know. It was Flooding or Flooded, one of those. But I wrote an abbreviation poem about it, and it had a totally different kind of feel to it than this one did. Because it was more, I don't know. It was a different emotion.
Yeah. I've written a few, too, and I think that it comes out sort of similar, but pretty different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
So, now that you've been writing for some time and you've had some publications, how does it feel looking back on, like, when you first began writing? Because I was just telling my family the other day that now I'm 16 and I've had about 40 publications. I kind of lost track. And now looking back on this thing that I wrote in my journal, like, when I was 13, and I was like, you can try to get 2 publications this year. You can do it. And now I'm like, wow. But yeah.
Yeah, well, I didn't get published, like, right away. Like, I probably wrote, like, maybe 10 or 15 poems before one of them got published in, like, a paper. And I remember very vividly the first day, because my friend had told me, like, oh, yeah, I got some email from someone named A.E. Scythe. And I was like, oh, okay, well, if I ever get that, that means I'm getting published. And I remember the first night, and I got an email from her. I was like, oh, my God, I wonder if I'm getting published. And I looked, and I was so happy, like, to get published. And, now, I have it written down somewhere for on my resume. But I think I've probably gotten published 40, 50 times. And now if I get an email, and they're like, hey, yeah, you got it published, I'm like, oh, great, that's super cool. But it's not, like, a super big thing. Because, like, back in the old days, I used to go, like, I don't live in Vermont, and I do go to school there, so my stuff can get published in the free press. And so it's hard for me, though, since I don't always get the free press on Fridays, or I'm not somewhere near to get the free press. So sometimes on Saturdays, I'll go behind, I'll ask, like, gas stations if I can see if they have one left, and they'll be like, oh, there might be some out in the recycling bin. So I've dug through several recycling bins to get a poem.
Oh, my gosh. Today.
It's pretty funny, but yeah.
Yeah, I think that it's definitely really interesting to talk about, like, when you first start out writing and then after you've had some publications. And this is really kind of a big thing that I've been thinking about lately, is just that sort of I feel like I'm getting the news of a publication different than I used to. Even though it's just as exciting, I feel like I'm just sort of like, oh, yay, another publication. Whereas before I was like, oh, my God, I'm the coolest person ever.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I'm still so grateful for any kind of publication. It means so much. But yeah, I feel like my response to it is just changing a little bit. But I don't want it to. I don't want to be like blasé about it.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, well, another
You should be so grateful.
And I think it's really interesting because I always find it cool, like, even if, like, for example, I haven't gotten published in the newspaper in, like, maybe a month or something. I haven't really been keeping track, but I haven't gotten published in the newspaper in a while. But I do enjoy seeing, new writers getting published, or I sometimes, if I have, like, a free, like, some spare time, I'll go and just into the read tab and just scroll through and like and comment on the pieces that I like and try to get them out there. So I remember when I was, like, a newer writer to the site, that it was getting published was so cool, and I want to be able to help other people have that kind of same experience in their lives and be really happy about it. And of course, when I, like you said, when I get published, I'm still like, oh yeah, that's awesome, like, go me.
Yeah.
Hey, Team Charlotte.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting to talk about. I think that, yeah, because now you're a community leader, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. So we have this, like, ability as community leaders to sort of propel more young writers into, like, publications and just having their work read even more. So I think that's another really cool part of YWP.
Yeah, I love being a community, like, for that exact reason, basically. I love being a community leader because, I remember, like, the first time I was ever in the newsletter, and I was so excited, and like being able to have that feeling for other people, or being able to help other people with that feeling. Or I'm doing the book club now too, like, shout out to the book club. Like, read the book. What is it? Oh, it's All We Have. It's something like this, All We Have Left, by someone whose name I can't pronounce, but it's a really good book and you should all read it. Anyway, I love being able to help out at YWP and be able to do these things and create more opportunities for other people who are just starting out or who are maybe wanting to have more with their writing.
Yeah, and that's another really awesome thing about this podcast, and I've talked about this so much, is that I'm getting close to finishing high school in about a little bit of time. And so once I'm done with high school, I want to have something that I can say, okay, I had this opportunity and I took it and I created a podcast, and it helped a lot of people who were interested in writing and it made an impact.
Yeah, exactly. I love doing, like, often, like, I'll be shooting emails to Susan Reed at like midnight being like, hey, YWP idea or new book club read or some crazy subjects of just random ideas I have. And I love being able to help out because I know that it's, even if I'm not solving climate change like on a daily basis or doing something huge, I can still do something little and help people.
Yeah, I think it's important. And now that we're all like quarantined, we don't have that much to do. Podcast gives us something to listen to.
Yeah, exactly. And I was super happy when I saw you're doing this. This is so much fun.
I know. It's a lot of fun. And what's cool is that I know a lot of people from YWP. So some of the people that I know are interested in it. I'm like, oh, yay, awesome. Like, I met you at this workshop or at this conference and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I met you. Where did I meet? I feel like,
It was a few years ago, maybe. I don't know.
It wasn't Listen Up Project. It was something else. Because I met you for the second time. Gosh, I can't remember for the... Jeez.
I'm not sure.
It'll come to me eventually. But
yeah.
Was it... No. Gosh. Okay. Anyway. It's somewhere.
Some workshop, probably.
Yeah. Definitely a workshop.
Yeah. Did you ever go to the open mics?
I hosted a social justice open mic. Did you? I don't know if you went to that, though.
I didn't go to that one.
I don't think you were there. I remember Adele M. Brunstead was there and someone else. There was a few other people.
Yeah. The open mics were really cool. I went to one and I felt so intimidated because I was the youngest person there and I sort of felt like maybe I don't really belong because my poem's a little bit cutesy and the other poems are super serious and maybe it's not like the right place for me to read my poem. But then I read it and of course that's when I was like super nervous and I'd read like really fast and I wouldn't enunciate anything. So no one had any idea what I was saying, but it still felt really good to like read it and then people would be like, yay, woohoo, like that, and snap, and that was
fun. Just like clapping, even if it's like it's okay poem, like it's not your best work, that people are still clapping and
it still feels good to have that like positive feedback. And then I went to a couple more open mics, a few different places, and I went to one at the library in Wollaston, and I won by default because I was the only high schooler. I got a $20 gift card to the coffee shop, so that was awesome. Open mics are a really great way to like get feedback and to just share your poem and to feel a little more like confident about your writing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Gosh, I'm still trying to think about where I met you.
I'm pretty sure it was a workshop.
Gosh, I'll have to go back through, like, the workshops and figure it out.
Yeah. The anthology party, one of them.
It might have been. Yeah, it might have been
the
that.
First, yeah.
The thing I remember about meeting you was, your username is Eyes of Iris.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that for the longest time. I thought it was something French, like that word was something French, and I know French, but I didn't know that, and so meeting you, you were like, and I don't go anywhere to try to like say people's usernames aloud, I just read it, so I remember meeting you, and you're like, oh yeah, my username's Eyes of Iris, I was like, oh my god, that makes so much sense.
Yeah, so basically, I signed up like about 4 years ago, and at the time, I was really into the idea of writing a memoir, because when you're like... When you're around 12 or 13, the idea of a memoir is, like, so awesome. Because obviously you have so much to say. So my memoir title was going to be From the Eyes of Iris. And so I was going to do that as my username, but it was kind of long. And my dad was like, what about Eyes of Iris? So mysterious. I was like, okay, sure.
Well, yeah, so that's exactly what happened with mine. When I signed up, I was like, okay, this could be my username for a while. I have to think of something good. And I just read, I don't know if you've read any Cassandra Clare books.
I haven't, but I've seen them.
Yeah, so my friend and I are super into them. And we just read all of them. I was like, I gotta think of something like mysterious and cool and powerful. And the first thing that came to mind was there's a Cassandra Clare book named Lady Midnight. And it's this super cool book about people who just like I don't know, like kill demons and like and just like kick ass. And so I was like, okay, yep, this is it. And so that's the story of my username.
I used to shelve at Pearson Library in Shelburne. So like I would volunteer when I was like about when I signed up for YWP actually. I would go to the library on like Saturday mornings and shelve all the books in the kids section and stuff. It was actually pretty cool. And the Cassandra Clare books were always like out.
Yeah, or, like they were coming in and
recycling
them.
So I knew that they were pretty popular, but I never got to read them.
I own the newest one because I had to buy it in order to get it, but
there are so many like popular books that I just haven't read.
Mm-hmm, yeah. I'm always reading like the obscure titles.
Yeah, I get a lot of shame for it. You haven't read Harry Potter and you haven't read I don't know, Narnia and stuff. But
I'd say not a lot, but most of the popular books. But sometimes my friend in the, I don't know if, did you go to the old Pearson Library in the, like the,
yeah, that's where I used to shelve it.
Okay. So yeah, we would go into, so you know, the computers and then there's like that little like place for the adults, I mean, for the teens. And so my friend and I would go in there and we would just kind of, we would stand there and we would we'd close our eyes and point to a random book and give it to each other. Oh. And the one time that actually worked, I found a really good book and didn't want to give it away, so I stole it and wouldn't let her read it. It was okay. And that led me to my discoveration of my new favorite series for a while. So.
Oh, what is it?
I don't remember. That was a while ago. It was, the author's name was Michael something. It started, I feel like it started with a B, but I could be making that up. And the cover of the book has it's about like a girl in World War II. A fighter who's like fighting, I don't know, but it's a good book, so if any of you can find out the book I'm reading, you should read it.
So cool. Yeah. But yeah, I used to volunteer at that library and I'd help with like the kids events and like background stuff, but yeah, that was a lot of fun. And then I got to I got to the point where I had read, because that had a pretty small like YA collection. Mm-hmm. There weren't that many books. So I got to the point where I'd read pretty much every single one, and I was just cycling through my favorites. And
yeah, do you know Katie, the librarian?
Yeah.
Katie?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. She's epic. But she and I always have a thing where I'll be like, Katie, I need books from this specific genre, and she'll help me find something. But I've always read, like, most of her suggestions.
Yeah, and then for, I think, once or twice, I did this thing where I'd write, like, reviews about books, but I think I only did it like once or twice. I don't know, that might be a thing, it might not.
I feel like I did something like that maybe like a while ago,
but yeah. And now I'm getting more into like, I think that now, like, as a reader, my tastes have changed a little bit, and now I'm more into like mysteries and thrillers and stuff. And
I'm so scared of thrillers. I'm so scared of like everything in general, just in like when you called me, for example, I was working on we're writing a novel for school, novella for school. So I was working on my novella and it's about pirates. So I was listening to the Pirates of the Caribbean soundtrack to try to get in the mind.
Yeah.
And then the Skype thing rang and I like jumped out of my chair.
I know, it scares me too. Everyone always says I'm really clumsy because I am. And there's this one story. And this is, like, probably the greatest point in my life. Like, I will never reach this much success ever again. But this is going to take a little bit for people to understand because it's so, like, really? How is it even humanly possible? Basically, I was babysitting. And I was with this kid. And he was in bed. And I was just, like, tucking him in. And it was a bunk bed. And so it was the bottom bunk that I was sitting on. And it was about, like, 6 inches away from the wall. So I started to leave the bed, and I went into the cove by the wall that was, like, about 6 inches wide. And my foot went down, and I fell on my ankle, and I sprained my ankle.
Oh,
And so when I say I sprained my ankle falling from a bunk bed, people are like, oh my gosh, the top bunk, did you get a concussion? I was like, no, it was the bottom bunk.
I had an ingrown toenail thing a while ago, and I had this thing, I don't know if this happens to anybody else, but at like 2 a.m. I wake up and I'll be like, my toenail is way too long, and then I'll need to like go like clip it immediately. And I did that one night, but I clipped it too close, and it got like, I don't know if it got infected, but it got ingrown for now. And and I had to have surgery on it, and eventually it's healing now. But and I went back to school, and except for like my friends who knew what had happened, I was like, oh yeah, I got toe surgery. And I was like, oh my god, are you okay? And I had to explain like the scenario, and it always felt kind of silly saying it.
Yeah, it takes people a while. And then I had to go to the ER because my ankle was like all swollen. It was huge. And so everyone, like all the nurses and doctors and stuff, they asked me like, oh, what happened? How did this happen? I said, I sprained my ankle. I fell from a bunk bed. And they're like, oh, really? The top bunk? I was like, no, it was the bottom bunk. So yeah, that's probably the greatest thing I've ever done.
Nice.
But yeah, now my ankle's pretty good.
Yeah, like, I mean, I don't live a dangerous life, per se, but I do play basketball, and I've never, beside, like, a jammed finger, like, maybe two jammed fingers, in the course of 4 years, I've never gotten severely injured in basketball at all. But I get injured doing stupid stuff. Like, I scratched my wrist on the carpet because my friend's dog scared me, or whatever. Triumph stories.
We have pocket doors in my house, which are basically these like sliding doors that slide out of the wall. Everyone thinks it's like really awesome and magical. Like it's straight from Harry Potter. So basically, you have to like slide them all the way out or all the way in, and they don't just like magically move to and fro. So I had one that was like about halfway open, and I was turning back to go into my closet, and I banged my knee, and it rattled, and it sounded like a wrecking ball had hit the house. It was so loud, and it hurt so badly. I'm pretty clumsy. But, okay, back to poetry.
Yeah, back to poetry. We're going off track.
Pretty off track. This is going to make it pretty amusing for you guys. So, how do you get inspiration in general? From reading something.
Sometimes it'll be like, oh my gosh, this would be so cool to write about, or this is a great metaphor, let me write a poem about it. Or something happens and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to write about it, because otherwise I'll just be sad. Or, oh my gosh, I'm so happy, need to write about this. And sometimes I'll see something on your internet project, I'll be like, that is such a great idea, and then I'll just, like, sprout from their poem and write my own. So it's a process.
Inspiration comes from a lot of different places.
I think mainly there's no great secret to poetry. Like, none of us have it all figured out. Like, we've written bad poems and good poems and amazing poems and just don't want to mention poems.
Yeah. Exactly. I feel like what's interesting is that if I sort of think about all the poems that I've written or like shared, I feel like I sort of have a list of like greatest hits, which is so weird to think about.
Exactly.
Like, these mean the most to me, or they've been the most popular, and there are others that just haven't really served me. But in a way, that's good, because then you're sort of filtering out what doesn't help you, and then it doesn't take up extra space in your brain.
Yeah, exactly.
And even if it's not helpful now, maybe it'll be helpful later, or...
Mm-hmm. I always have, like, a kind of a few in my head at mind, or if there's, like, a poetry contest or something, I'll be like, oh my gosh, I wrote this poem, and this would be perfect, sort of thing.
Yeah, and... I think that when you're writing, because I used to sort of feel like every poem I wrote had to be so significant, and it had to be about some huge meaning about, like, the universe and about how, like, this is the meaning of life and stuff. But I don't think every poem has to be that, like, meaningful. It doesn't have to be super significant. It can just be what you're feeling in the moment or what you want to express or just what is important to you.
Yeah, and I mean, for me, the one thing that, as I I mean, I don't just read, I read poems a lot, like, in general places. And I think the one thing for me that kind of makes a poem better is when it's something that you're writing about from real life. Like, some people write about, like, oh, you haven't talked to me in years and I've missed you so. And it's like, okay, so that's, like, that can be something that you write about. But at the same time, is it true? Is it something that's actually happening to you? Since it's hard to tell, like, the feeling behind a poem if it's not really, if it's not real.
Yeah, sometimes it feels a little too cliche, too.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, some people's lives are like, cliches. Like, some people could have that cliche life. But at the same time, if you're writing about it, it helps the poem immensely. If it's real, if it's coming from the heart, rather than something that you read about or seen in a movie or a TV show and you want to write about.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like your poems are, like, too cliche or generic? Sometimes I feel that way.
Yeah, I've definitely written a few poems that are kind of, like, cliche, and I'm like, oof, no. for the most part, I mean, I don't really live, like, a typical life, so to speak. So my poems tend to kind of mix things up a little bit. But there's definitely some I've written about, and then, because I've seen someone write about and be like, oh, okay, I want to write about that too, and then write about it, and, like, that's not really me. Like, that's someone else's sort of thing that they're experiencing, but it's not really my thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely feel like some of my things are a little too cliche or a little too, like, that's not really how you feel. That's just what you think that you should feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so... But, yeah, it's really interesting to read my poetry from when I was younger, my poetry now. And recently I switched my computers, and I had a bunch of writing on my old computer that I hadn't really looked at. So I had to go through all my files, and I was like, whoa, I really wrote that? Or sometimes I was like, oh, gosh, no, don't show me that.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I've had someone come up to me and like, oh, my gosh, I loved your poem. And I'm like, what poem? And they'll say something, and I'll be like, wait, think about that one. Gotta find that one in the archive.
Yeah, I was actually talking about this in one of the other podcasts, is that a lot of people read my poetry, like, in my neighborhood, and my doctor, and my aunt. So it's interesting when one of them mentions my poems, I'm like, oh, wow, you read it. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, my art teacher, who kind of scares me a tiny bit sometimes. But anyway, there's a few people in my school who write poems in the Language Project, and so whenever she sees them published, she takes a few, not all of them, but whenever she sees them published, she'll see our names, and she'll cut them out, and she'll pin them up around the school. And sometimes it's like, oh, cool, people get to see what I'm doing, and sometimes it's like, I don't want people who I know seeing that.
Yeah. So, I wrote one poem that was about being a teenager, and it mentioned, like, drugs and a couple other things, and my English teacher usually reads my poems to her kids because she lives nearby and she gets the paper that my poems are published in. And she was like, oh, I don't think I'm going to share this one with them. But yeah, they love reading my poetry. And it's really sweet because when I go and babysit, she usually has my latest poem on her fridge. And it's like the sweetest thing ever.
Yeah. At the anthology event I was hosting, and I was done. I was kind of chatting up the crowd. No, I was just talking to people. And, I ran into a woman came up and said hi to me, and I recognized her from somewhere, and I couldn't figure out where. And it took me a while. I was like, oh my gosh, are you from Davis Studio? She was like, yeah. Oh. And she was, I said, I did Annie there when I was like maybe six. I did Annie with her. I was like, recognize your face. And she's like, oh my God. And so we talk a while, and it turns out that she was like, you're Lady Midnight, right? I was like, yeah. She's like, oh my gosh. There's a group of writers here at Davis Studios who love your poetry. You have a fan club. And I was like, oh my God.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I used to take a writing class at Davis Studio, actually. And that's when I wrote a lot of poetry. That wasn't that fantastic. But yeah, I was also the community leader at that point. It was like right after when I was taking the class. And the teacher came in one day and she was like, okay, we're going to talk about this organization called YWP. Has anyone ever heard of it? And I didn't want to be like, I'm a community leader, because I thought that'd be like really pretentious.
Like name dropping.
Yeah. Like, what do you think about me now? Yeah. So I just didn't really say anything, and it was a little bit awkward. But yeah, I really liked that writing class. I wrote a lot for that.
Yeah, I just did Annie Bear, and they gave me a part that wasn't real, but it's fine. And we sang a song from Snow White. That's actually how the lady remembered me. I was like, oh my god, I was an Annie, and she was like, Annie? I was like, yeah, remember when I was a maid and we sang the Snow White song?
Yeah, that was always a lot of fun going there. And they have the cafe now, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I was there like a while ago, so it was still under construction, but
yeah,
it's a cool place.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's kind of weird when people like recognize your poetry and stuff. I water a lot of my neighbor's plants during the summer. That's how I get all of my revenue. And so I was taking care of my neighbor's garden, and she was like, oh, I had the paper the other day and I read your poem. And I was like, oh gosh, was that the one that was talking about drugs and stuff? I hope not. Because she's like elderly, but I don't think it was. But anyway, she was like, that's so cool that you're getting published. So yeah, even support from old neighbors is cool.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have a bit of an advantage with, advantage, disadvantage, with my family lives in New York, so only my teachers and stuff read it, so my family only get to read my published poems if I let them.
Yeah, how do you feel about your family reading your work?
Well, it kind of depends on the poem again. Sometimes they'll find it, and they'll read it, and they'll be like, this is beautiful, this touched my soul, and I'm like, okay, like, thank you. Sometimes I do, and they come to the all anthology events, and they do get to read some of my work. My mom's like, I don't let them read like my plays and stuff, since I want to wait for that to be like read, or if it's presented or something, I want to see them fresh. But for the most part, I'm okay with it, as long as it's not something that's super deep or really meaningful or something I don't want to talk about with them.
The general consensus from my family is, like, I have no idea what this means, but I'm super proud of you.
Yeah. It's really definitely
sweet. The same with mom. But yeah, they make an effort to read it, and I think that's really awesome. We get a few copies of the paper when I'm in it, and we like to analyze my poetry, which is really how this whole podcast started.
Yeah, exactly.
There are definitely some poems that I just don't really... I feel like it would be sort of uncomfortable for my family to read. Because I feel like it's from such a, like, personal part of me that sort of, like, oh, this is weird.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, and sometimes Susan, okay, another shout out to Susan Reeds. But sometimes she'll send me my poetry in the free press, which is amazing, because I can't always get to it. Especially, there was one I wrote about, like, Marianne Williamson, who was my favorite presidential candidate, who now has dropped out, and it's old white men again. But anyway, politics aside, and she sent that to me, and my grand plan was going to send it to Marianne, but then it got lost in like the depths of my backpack, so it's still there. But I did get to, I met her. I was like, oh my gosh, I wrote a poem, and I'll see if I can send it to you. So, you That's know, really cool. If you're listening, it's coming sometime.
Yeah. I think that poetry in general is just so cool, and I talk about this all the time, and I say this all the time, so it's like broken record, Iris, but because of the connection, because it connects you with something that you wrote that interests you or inspired you to someone else who reads it and gets inspired, or someone else who reads it and is like, wow, I felt that, and like, it's all about the connection and the, like, this person who relates to this person who relates to this object.
Yeah, exactly. And, Young Writers Project, it's all about connection, too. Like, I love, especially, again, like, the tiny writes. I love going on there, and people are like, such and say something, and people are like, oh, like, happy birthday, or, oh, sorry to hear this, hope you're feeling better, or, oh my gosh, this is so cool, like, way to go, sort of thing. It's another kind of connection piece with the poetry, even if it's not directly poetry.
Yeah, I think that it's really a great community, and it's important to have something like that when you're, like, in middle school or high school, because then it's, like, a really tricky time. There's a lot going on, and there's a lot that you can't really control, and a lot that you can control, though.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've written many a poem sobbing, just, like, typing things on my keyboard.
Yeah, I've written quite a few poems about high school and just how it makes me feel, and sort of feeling like I'm not the stereotypical teenager, because I don't like wear crop tops or go to public school or vape, but I mean, I don't really need that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't vape either. but I go to a Waldorf school, which is mm-hmm. definitely different. Just totally different curriculum. Like us, we're using Google Classroom now for online schooling, and that is just like so out of the. It's like, yeah. Whoa, what is happening?
My homeschool program is Waldorf, and it's mm-hmm. a lot of it is like. Go outside and observe something in nature for 10 minutes. And that's like yeah. my biology assignment or my English assignment.
Yeah, so definitely. Yeah,
it's pretty different. But I mean, even if people think that we're different for like going to Waldorf school or being homeschooled, I mean, we're all still teenagers. We still go through wondering like, am I a child? Am I an adult? What am I going to do when I go to college? Should I straighten my hair or curl it? I mean, there's a lot that we wonder about.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the times there can be a lot of pressure, like, to, like, do something fancy with your hair, or, like, wear this brand of makeup, or yeah. wear makeup. Like, some people just aren't comfortable wearing makeup, or don't like it, and, like, that's totally cool. Like, that's them. And some people love makeup. That's them, too. Like, yeah. you gotta just, like, let people do what they want, and how they feel they want to represent themselves.
Exactly. And stereotypes just really bug me.
Yeah.
Like, there's so many stereotypes about homeschoolers that, like, mm-hmm. oh, we don't have any friends, or we're so isolated from society, and we don't know how to act with other people, and we don't have any sense of humor. Like, I was with my friend once, and we'd known each other for, like, 2 years at this point. Like, we're pretty close. And I said a funny joke, and we were all laughing. And she was like, wow, I'm really surprised that you're funny. And I was like, why? And she was like, because you're homeschooled. And I was like, excuse you.
What
does that have to do with it?
Yeah, sometimes I'll get things like, you must be really rich to be able to send to Waldorf school.
Yeah.
And like, I'm not gonna lie, Waldorf school isn't cheap. Like that's yeah. not a like it does cost a good amount of money. But at the same time, all four of my parents, my step parents and my actual parents, they're all starting their own businesses. My dad is he's a town supervisor, mm-hmm. so he does have that. But other than that, they all work from themselves. They all work from home. There's three kids, and they send them all to Waldorf school. So like, yeah. it's not like we're really rich. Like I live in an average size house. My brothers yeah. have to share a room, but it's not like. Yeah, it's not like we're like, I'm like, oh, I go to Waldorf school, so I wear mink to school.
Yeah, there's just a lot of stuff like that just bothers me, because you can't assume something like that about someone. People think that, like, I don't know what a swear word is, like, oh, don't say anything bad, like, she doesn't know what that is. Yeah. Like, seriously, my parents swear all the time, my brother swears all the time, I swear sometimes, but I try not to because I babysit, and that'd be bad. Yeah. But yeah, like, and then I say, like, frick or something, and they're like, oh my gosh, really? Can you say that? Won't your parents be mad? Like, no, it's okay. I'm not that sheltered.
Yeah, exactly. Like I have an iPhone, and my dad was recently getting an upgrade and my phone broke down, so he gave me his phone, which is like a newer phone. And there was a few people that I met who were like so surprised that I had a phone. They were like, why do you have technology? Like, that's not allowed.
yeah. Like, oh. But now there's like a complete difference when I say like I'm homeschooled versus I do online school. It's one and the same for me, because when you get to high school, it's all online and I have like actual teachers, and that really surprises people. But what's funny to me now is that with the quarantine stuff, all the school shut down, it's all online. So now I'm like, well, joke's on you guys. This is what I do. It's really not that weird. I'm not mm-hmm. like knitting horse yarn or something.
To be fair, I have like done stuff like that. We have yeah. handwork classes, and so I used to be able to knit. I've knitted cats and socks. Yeah. I knitted one sock. It's like a very long sock, but it's knitted a sock, crocheted thing.
Yeah, I used to do a lot of interesting things, because like all my stuff was Waldorf too, and my mom's really into that stuff. So we would like get acorns from outside and use them for math, and like felt. We used a lot, which is probably stuff that you all know.
Yeah, exactly. We like made our own knitting needles in first grade.
All sorts of stuff like that too. And I did a whole curriculum for third grade that was based on the Little House on the Prairie series, which was pretty cool. And this is actually a cool fact that takes a little bit of explaining to do. People are like, wait, did you fail the first time? So I actually did sixth grade twice. I did third grade was my first thing I ever did for, like, actual school, which was a little House on the Prairie thing. And then I did sixth grade, and then I did fifth grade, and then sixth grade. Now I'm at 10. But, yeah, I never did fourth grade. So that's...
Yeah, I mean, I've been in, like a, I mean, not, I've been in Waldorf school, but, like, a typical system of first, second, third grade. But in fourth grade, I was in the class that wasn't, like, great for me. They were kind of rowdy and stuff. And I've always been, like... I worked hard at school, and I've always gotten great grades, so I moved up a grade, and so my stepbrother, who is 2 months older than me, is actually in the grade below me, and people get so confused, because, I mean, my family's kind of strange anyway with the way, like, the divorces and the, like, the, it's a long story, and, well, I'm just gonna tell you anyway, since I'm on this topic, but, like, my parents, my mom and my dad were married, and my stepbrother's parents were married, but then they, like, swapped spouses.
Oh my gosh, so that's the coolest thing ever, because I actually know someone else who did that.
Yeah. Really?
So
that's so cool. I've never heard of that before.
Yeah, my parents,
like, I mean, other than myself.
Yeah, my parents used to live on this apple orchard in, I think it was North Hero, either North Hero or South Hero, I get them confused, but I'm pretty sure it was North Hero, and there's this man who married them, actually, he was the, like, official person at their wedding.
Yeah,
like, and he was married to his wife, and there's this other couple, and they're married, and then they swap, like, partners.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's so I have, like, a double stepbrother sort of thing.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, though, because you can't really say that you know that many other people who have that kind
of thing. Yeah, exactly. It's kind of strange.
Yeah. All right, well, this has been so much fun.
Yeah, if you're still listening, thank you for making it to the end.
This was episode 3 of Line Break. I hope you enjoyed, and stay tuned for episode 4. Bye.